Welcome to Shift to Tomorrow. Now is the moment leaders throughout distribution must lift our eyes, look towards the horizon, and shift our lens from merely making it through this unprecedented uncertainty to coming out stronger on the other side. This is your moment. Are you ready? You can create your future. You own your tomorrow. And your journey of shifting to tomorrow begins now with your host, Dirk Beveridge.
Welcome back to Shift to Tomorrow. I am Dirk Beveridge, your host, and I am so pleased you continue to find us for these amazing conversations that I'm having with these wicked smart individuals who are helping us all lift our eyes towards that horizon and ensure that we are shifting towards tomorrow to come out of this COVID pandemic that continues to wreak havoc on our society, on our country, certainly on our businesses still today as we have moved into 2021. Really excited for this episode today to introduce to you to Kelly Jones, Dr. Kelly Jones, who is the Director of Learning and Program Content at the National Association of Electrical Distributors. And the title of our conversation today is The New Relationship in Distribution, Manager to Employee. In our conversation, Kelly's going to discuss the findings of her qualitative research and her instructional design in higher education, corporate training, nonprofit organizations, and now with the great work that she's doing at NAED. As Kelly has focused on leadership, what she's going to do here in this conversation that you're just going to absolutely get a ton out of is she's going to present a new paradigm for us that's going to define what effective leadership is post-COVID. And you're going to see how we take a new look at the truism throughout distribution. That truism says that this is a relationship business. Well, what does that mean in post-COVID? And the hint is, it's not what you think. Let's jump right in, enjoy my conversation with Kelly Jones from the NAED. Dr. Kelly Jones, who's the Director of Learning and Program Content at the National Association of Electrical Distributors. And I'm just gonna brag on her just a little bit. You know, we've done some work with NAED and their strategic planning and all that. And, you know, customer or member engagement, like for all associations, is one of the things that they're focused on. And she came in and put together a leadership program, and it is absolutely amazing, sold out like that, and is just making a big, big difference in terms of developing leadership throughout electrical distribution. And congratulations on building something from scratch. Just an amazing story. And congratulations on that, Kelly. Just great.
Thank you. We're very excited about it. So,
Yeah. So Kelly is a qualitative researcher and consultant with over 15 years of experience in instructional design and curriculum development in higher education, corporate training, nonprofit organizations, now at NAED. And Kelly, welcome to Shift to Tomorrow.
Thank you for having me, Dirk. This is exciting. I've watched several of these. I love seeing you in your element. It's so obvious that you love bringing people in and having these conversations. So this should be fun.
Yeah, I know it's going to be fun. Thanks. And I think, you know, when you say seeing me in my element, what I'm thinking about is thank God there's a video between us, because I'm pitting out right now. That's a little too much information probably, huh? All right. So, Kelly, I know that you've done a lot of employee-based research. And one example was at one point in time, you interviewed 150 employees, 150 individuals in this one organization relative to what they look for from their work experience. And can you tell us about that research, those interviews, and what you found out about what people are really looking for in their work?
Yeah, it was so interesting. So the organization had a very large marketing department. Marketing was the heart and soul of what they did. And we had some quantitative data that showed how expensive it was to lose a junior marketer if they left within the first 18 months, because it costs so much to recruit, you know, and to train and to onboard and get them in. And there weren't as many of them lasting past that 18 month mark as we would have wanted. Right. Great salaries, great benefits, great work environment. So what was going on? Yeah. So I interviewed 150 people, junior marketers, senior executives, CMO, people who had left the company. And what we found was the number one variable was their relationship with their direct manager. Huh. And the person that they directly reported to. That relationship determined whether or not they wanted to stay at the company. And what we found with the managers was this almost direct ideological split between two philosophies of management, especially for new employees. So we had what I would call the old school, who said, I had to walk 10 miles uphill in the snow each way every day, and so should they. I had to learn this the hard way, and so should they. And if they can't, then they can't cut it and they shouldn't be here. And then we had the other kind of new school philosophy that said, my job is to set these people up for success. How can I facilitate the success of a new employee? And the mentality between those two groups largely determined whether or not someone wanted to stay at the organization.
Yeah.
That was the number one factor that we found.
Yeah. Is that something? And do you see that old school is still prevalent today?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Across industries, across organizations, across leadership styles and levels, there still seems to be a lot of that. And what we've learned from research around retention with employees is that someone decides within the first 30 days if they're staying in their current job. They might not quit. It may be 2 or 3 years down the line, but you'll never get 100% from that person. Like, they're already mentally divorced.
Yeah.
And they make that decision within the first 30 days. And that is largely dictated by their relationship with their primary manager.
Interesting. So I want to go down a couple paths there, if you don't mind. Okay.
Sure.
So one, you know, we titled our session, The New Relationship and Distribution Post COVID-19, Manager to Employee. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we in distribution, I hear it all the time. And that this is a relationship business. And that is often described in terms of our relationship with the customer.
Yeah.
Whenever that's said, they're talking about the relationship with the customer. And as I'm talking to you, I'm saying, wait. There might be an opportunity for a paradigm shift here and say, you know what? If this is a relationship business, maybe what's even more important, or maybe as important at least, mm-hmm. the relationship with the customer is that relationship with the manager, or excuse me, the employee, right?
Yep.
And I, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right, because we know, you know, we focus on customer experience, and customer experience is what determines the success of a company.
Yep.
But employee experience is what determines customer experience.
Yeah.
So what you want your employees to give your customers is what you have to give your employees, because those two things are completely correlated and tied together.
So say that to me again. What we want to give our customers?
Yes. What we want our employees to give our customers is what we have to give our employees, because the customer experience is dictated by the employee experience.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So if you could... I know this is an entire MBA in and of itself, right? But if you could net it out for us to get us started, if I buy into the premise that we got to spend more time thinking about the relationship between the manager and the employee, coach me. You know, where should I start in terms of improving that?
You start with a very simple mindset shift. And I'm going to bring this in from my education background. So I spent a lot of years helping professors become professors. So they come to the university with deep expertise. They don't know how to teach. Right. And I did a lot with teachers who were preparing to be teachers. And we would do this introduction conversation, and I would say, what do you teach? And they would go around the room. I teach astronomy. I teach math. I teach science. I teach chemistry. And I'd let them all go. And then I'd say, you're all wrong. What do you teach? And it would take like 5 whole minutes of conversation to figure out. We teach people. And so I think the exact same mentality is required for business. So if you ask someone, what do you manage? They may say, I lead our sales. I lead operations. I lead this brand. Mm-hmm. I lead our financial investments. I lead our projects.
Yes.
No, you don't. You lead people. And that very simple shift, just where you're positioning yourself, if you are leading people. And yeah. Every bit of work that you have to do can only be facilitated through your relationship with those people.
So I love this. So let me go back to the way I started 2 hours ago. Companies don't change, transform, and innovate. People do.
Correct.
Companies don't change, transform, and innovate. People do. Now you're telling me something I intuitively believed, but mm-hmm. now you're telling me that it's true, that we have to that we have to get down to that people level if we want to drive anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And it's intuitive, like you said, in a lot of ways. I think people who are strong leaders do this intuitively. But going back to your previous conversation between unconscious competence, you know, conscious competence, conscious incompetence, when you start intentionally making that shift in the way you see yourself and the way you see your purpose at the organization, that you are a leader of people, it can transform a lot of things, or at least make you think about a lot of things differently.
So help me, you know, think about it as a leader. You know, we're in this new world. We're in this new remote world. We're in this world where people are frightened, where mm-hmm. people are scared. You know, Lori talked to us about safety, you know, wondering about their safety. If I want to be focused on the people in my organization and I want to develop that relationship right now, right? And I've made that mindset shift. Mm-hmm. Can you walk me through a couple steps that I should be thinking about to enhance that relationship at this point in time so that I can come out of this stronger on the other side?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the first step is understanding where everyone is. And I mean that in terms of where they are with this pandemic and mm-hmm. where they are, like what is their actual reality of their day-to-day situation? So I know you had shared earlier, and I loved this framework you got from Bethany Helper on your team, those phases of COVID-19, right? Adrenaline, exhaustion, crash, annoyance and impatience, and then a climb out. So most people right now are somewhere between exhaustion, crash, and annoyance and impatience, right? Okay. It helps to know, like, first of all, where are you personally?
Yeah.
Because that self-awareness is really important, right? When you're having to lead other people, because your job right now is doubly hard. Like, you're having to deal with all of this for yourself and for your family. But also, now you've also got to support your employees and your team that are going through this at the same time. So that first step, I think, would be self-awareness. Like, where are you? What phase are you in? What do you need in order to be able to step up and be stronger? Like, you can't give what you don't have. So how are you filling your own emotional well? How are you tending to your own safety first? I think that's really, really important. And then what's the reality of your employees? Like, who's home with kids? We've shifted our team meetings around one team member's two-year-old's nap schedule, because that's his reality. He's home with a toddler all day and, you know, and trying to do this work. So those kind of shifts that you can make when you have a little more information about the reality of everybody on your team, seeking that out and actively listening, you know, really checking in, not just the metrics that we're using to see how people are working from home, you know, how many sales did you make this week? How many calls did you complete? But actually checking in, how are you doing? How are you feeling? When was the last time you left the house? Are you going for a walk on your lunch hour? You know, that just going back to those simple, basic human needs that are really being overshadowed a lot in this pandemic, I think is a great place to start.
Yeah. You know, when we started these conversations back on March 15th, I was talking to a sales manager of an electrical distributor, happened to be Kelly. And as they're going to this remote mode, you know, it's mm-hmm. new for everybody. The initial reaction was top-down legislative. It was, to your point, how many calls, you know, we're going to call in at 10, and how many calls are we going to make? You know, you got to get this done by 3, you got to get this done by 2. And, you know, I tried to coach them out of that, but I think that was the natural reaction.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point, that's not the relationship that we should be developing. We got to focus in on that human.
Yeah, I think so. And people know if that's authentic. They know if it's genuine when they see it.
Yeah.
You know,
So when you hear my premise that it's the human spirit that creates all value, do you agree with it? Do you disagree with it?
No.
Is it too lofty? What does it mean to you then?
No, I absolutely believe that 100%. All of my work around the learning sciences, how people learn, what motivates them to learn, how we should teach, how we develop, how we grow, it all comes down to the human spirit. That's where innovation comes from. That's where creativity comes from, right? I mean, that how else do you get it done? All the technology in the world is not going to magically add that to your company. It is the people that do that. And so I think a lot about the holistic aspect of people and managing people, right? Where you have physical, mental, emotional, creative, you know, or spiritual, whatever you want to put on that top row. And I think a lot of leaders are starting to recognize this. I've seen more work around emotional intelligence and psychological safety in the last 3 years than I've seen in the last 15. Because it is being recognized, you know, as a crucial business skill to make people feel psychologically safe in order to take a risk, because risk is required for any kind of innovation, right? Yeah. Or any kind of change. But I think this, it really goes back to basic psychology and Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Like, so this understanding that there are basic levels that everybody needs to survive. So you have the physiological, you need food, you need water, you need rest. We tend to laugh that off in the 21st century.
Yeah, we do.
Right. But right now, rest, I don't know how you're sleeping. Insomnia during this pandemic is a real thing.
Yeah.
So we're rocking the very foundation of what you need just to survive as a human right now.
You know, I told the story, I think, a couple of weeks ago, where 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was talking to a 20 something who is writing this out at her parents' house. She's a great professional woman with a technology company. But down in Austin, I guess all the grocery stores are closed. You can only pick it up. You got to order online and all that. And she was concerned about not being able to get food for 3 weeks because it's low. So to your point, we've never had to think about that bottom rung of Maslow. But here we are today. And it's very real for some of us.
Yeah, it's very, very real. Yeah. And then the next level is safety, which tends to be described as security and shelter, right? Yeah. So for our ancestors, that would be, do I have a cave and am I safe from the bear, right? Like that kind of safety. Right now, so many jobs are on the line and economic security is up in the air for a huge number of people who never thought that they would be facing layoffs and losing their job. So level two is being shaken. Across the board for everyone kind of at the same time. And so the level three is belonging. So this is friends, family, love, community. Most of us are isolated from those things, right?
Yeah.
So level three is being shaken completely. Level four is esteem. So this is our confidence. This is respect, both giving and receiving respect. This is where our talents shine. This is where our accomplishments shine. We're expecting people to operate at level four when levels one, two, and three are being completely shaken.
Hard question. Yeah.
Right. And then level five is what Maslow called self-actualization. And that is where morality, creativity, and problem solving come in. So if you want innovation and change at your organization, you want people operating at level five.
Yeah.
They can't operate at level five if levels one through four aren't solid and secure.
Interesting. And if I hear you right, as we think about the relationship between the manager and the employee, I keep that type of a framework in mind. Mm-hmm. Is that right? And I can use that as a guide to say, am I meeting needs in each of those areas? Is that fair?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And how is your employee faring in each of those areas? Do they have shelter? Are they sleeping? Do they have security? Are they worried about their job? You know, do you have, maybe you don't know if you're going to be making layoffs, but what are the unemployment things looking like in your state? What are your leaders saying? Are you being transparent across the company?
Yeah.
So that fearing the unknown is sometimes worse than fearing the hard. You know, so I think it helps to think about, you can't do everything for all of your employees, but you can think about it through those five levels and see what can be done.
Yeah, I love it. What a great lens for us. You know, one of the things my wife gets very, very mad at me for is I think I own 130 different URLs on GoDaddy. And you know, Kelly, I believe the very first one I owned, and it's parked because I still have not done anything with it, is significantwork.com.
Oh, interesting.
Significantwork.com, because I've always, somewhere inside of me, you know, there's something about, you know, if we can help individuals feel significant at work, that the work is significant, then we're doing our job and we're doing our work.
I want to add an S to your domain.
Okay.
So we'll make it significant works. Significance works.
Significance works.
Works. Ah. Yeah. Because when you empower someone to be in a position where their work is significant and they feel the appreciation for that, they see it from you as their manager, they know their contribution is significant.
Yeah.
They work better.
Yeah.
And then you get more from them. So I would say significance on the whole works.
All right. Now, nobody listening, go get that URL.
We will do it right
now. We got to end this right now. All right.
Okay. I will let you go update your website.
No, I love it. Thank you. Thanks. Okay. I'm going to ask a really silly question, then I want to pivot. All right.
Okay.
With all of this great conversation, you know, let's go back to the word relationship. Okay. Can you just, again, this is going to be a silly question, but it's in my mind. I want to ask it. How do you define relationship? How would you define that word?
That's a really good question. I would say, what are the first three words that come to mind when you think of a particular person? I think the intuitive way we do that as people is, how does being around this person make me feel?
Okay.
Whether we realize we do it or not.
Yeah.
And so you can formally frame a relationship, right? This is my boss. This is my child. A lot of that is based on power dynamics within the relationship. There's a lot of hidden power dynamics in a lot of relationship, right? The word manager in and of itself implies, you know, this person is in charge of your time and your performance. So what is the framework for that relationship? But the real crux of it, I think, comes down to, how does this person make me feel?
Yeah.
And I don't know how often we sit back and say, how am I making the people who work for me feel?
Yeah.
It's very emotional, right? And I think that they don't, or maybe didn't used to necessarily value that or teach that when you're getting an MBA. But like I said, the resurgence of research around emotional intelligence is showing this to be super important. You know, do I feel safe to speak, like psychological safety, right? Yeah, to speak. Yeah. Is this someone who is constantly belittling me, or is this someone who listens to me? Do I trust this person? I think that is really the defining characteristic of any relationship.
Boy, I love it. Thanks. I love it. Thanks. I could go down a path, and I'm not going to, because... I love this. This is great. And I really think that you have hit on something here, that this is a relationship business.
Mm-hmm.
And let's pivot that conversation. And let's stipulate, if that's true, that there's another dimension of that throughout distribution that we need to be talking about. And that's the relationship between the manager or the leader and the employee, right? Mm-hmm. The organization and the employee. And I think we've started a conversation that can and should become much bigger here. Mm-hmm. Really, really believe that. So I appreciate that, Kelly. So let me pivot to something else that I think is pretty interesting with your background, right? With the work that you've done in higher education and the work that you do in developing people and curriculum development and all this. You know, in the last 7 weeks, we've all been doing this, right?
Yeah.
Been doing this remote stuff.
Yep.
Do you have any thoughts in terms of how this trend of remote working and remote learning and is going to carry itself forward in terms of how adults learn in a post-COVID-19 world?
I think it can. I think we have the potential here for some real innovation in a field that needs it.
Yep.
And I think we have the potential for a whole new kind of appreciation for lifelong learning that I think could actually have some strategic benefits across the board, not just for education as an institution, but for the way that we work and learn. I think you'll see the big trends, I guess, in the future will be, of course, on technology and analytics, because everybody wants to know, well, are they logging in for their training? Right. It's that same conversation. We're going to start top down. I want the numbers. I want to know what people are doing. Do we have the technology in place? But as we've started that over the last 7 weeks, people have seen, oh, technology is not enough. This is actually a human experience. Education is actually a human problem. So I think you'll see, first of all, just a huge new crop of dissertation topics, which I'm so curious about for all the researchers in the that are, you know, that are getting ready to start graduate work, how many of those studies are going to come back to COVID. But I think you're going to see some real lessons learned on motivation and engagement and what those things mean. I think that this is forcing us to pay attention to the digital divide and equity gaps in a way that we have chosen to ignore as a society until this point. And that is powerful. I think you're going to hear people thinking about how do you quantify the intangible, right? Think about the number of graduation ceremonies that have been canceled and what those mean to people, right? The number of retirement celebrations that have been canceled and what that means to people. Right. And so that those conversations in the hallway, that informal mentoring that takes place, we can do those things at a distance. You know, we can do those things with technology, but the way we think about them has to change. And I think you're going to see a turn. I hope you're going to see a turn to the actual science of learning, the things that we know people do best. Like you've implemented some of that here. Your sessions are short. These conversations run about a half hour. You know, you're looking at TED Talk length. So you've got something new to think about and look about every 20 to 30 minutes. You're not in a 4 to 8 hour seminar with the same speaker and the same topic, because we know that's not good for people. The Zoom burnout is a real thing. There's research coming out now about why being in a virtual setting is emotionally draining for people. So I think we can take that and learn a lot from it.
You shared that. You shared that with me. Tell us what that is, real quick, if you don't mind.
So it's really interesting. So apparently, when you have multiple people on screen, now the way you and I are doing this is totally cool. There's only two of us; it's fine. But when you get the Brady Bunch screen going, your brain is trying to interpret all of the nonverbal communication from every single person at the same time, and it is exhausting. It's absolutely exhausting. And a delay, if somebody freezes when they're speaking or when they're talking, causes the same kind of startle reflex that you have when somebody sneaks up behind you in a parking lot. And all of that is processing without you even being aware of it. Plus, you're hyper aware of being on camera, which is no fun, by the way. No fun. We don't like that part. But I think that understanding that and realizing not every meeting has to be on camera, or there's different ways of doing this, or maybe we tell somebody, you know, hit this project hard for 20 minutes and then go for a walk. Or like, I just think it's really going to highlight, now that we've all had this shared experience together at the same time, if we do really critical creative reflection, we can improve a lot of the ways we work in the future.
Yeah. And I think that is absolutely the opportunity that we have in front of us. Right. And Kelly, you've really opened up our minds and our thinking. And I really, really appreciate this. I do think we could go on for a lot longer here. I'll tell you what, a note I just wrote down, I think that kind of frames up, you know, maybe for me, at least right now, before I put more thought into it, is the statement you said and what that means to people and what that means to people. I mean, just that little phrase. If I can ingrain that in my mind, right, with everything that I do going forward, right, in terms of leading people, organizations, myself, family, what does that mean to people? I think that can help direct some real solid thinking in a lot of ways, and certainly to our premise that we had here about unleashing the human spirit.
Thanks for listening. continue your shift to tomorrow by visiting us at unleashwd.com to access free resources, including additional podcasts, white papers, webinars, and our weekly newsletter, Unleash Your Week. If you enjoyed today's episode, we'd also appreciate you reviewing our show with a 5-star review in the Apple Podcast app. Until next time, keep your eyes on the horizon, keep innovating, and shift to tomorrow.